is the South Washington County Bulletin podcast for May 9, and I'm managing editor Patricia Dre Butsey. For this week's show, I talked with Cottage Grove mayoral candidate Fred Luden about what kind of businesses he'd like to see the city attract and much more. But first, here's a news summary. Spanish immersion parents requested a few months ago that the program be expanded from 3 classes per grade level to 5. But district officials said Thursday they have no plans for expansion. Parents also requested that the program be moved from Crestview Elementary School in Cottage Grove to another school due to overcrowding, but Superintendent Tom Nelson said Thursday that the school does have adequate space to house the program. To address space concerns, though, the district will offer students in 2 neighborhoods slated to move from Crestview to Hillside Elementary in 2009 the opportunity to move early. Cottage Grove mayoral candidate Fred Luden said he won't turn down donations to his campaign, but he will redirect them. The city council member who recently announced his run for mayor said that he wants supporters to donate anything they would have given him to one of the area's nonprofit organizations. A Cottage Grove resident told officials Wednesday he wasn't happy with a plan to pave a trail easement that abuts his home. The owner of a home on 66th Street Court said paving the 8-foot-wide path would decrease his property value and threaten a nearby 20-foot-tall blue spruce tree. City Administrator Ryan Schrader said paving the trail would increase the public's access to the trail system. Red Rock Manor's 9 residents over 90 celebrated Monday at the Independent Living Facility's annual luncheon for those who've passed the 9-decade mark. The residents honored were Irene Mercero, Dorothy Bentz, Helen Petrowski, Rose Wilhelmy, Evelyn Marone, Delphine Linus, Alvina Kirshner, Wayne Mead, and Phyllis Hagen. For more on these stories and others, pick up the May 14 edition of the South Washington County Bulletin or go to our website at www.swcbulletin.com. Next, Councilmember Fred Luden recently announced his candidacy for Cottage Grove mayor. I talked with him this week. Here's our conversation. First of all, let's talk a little bit about your background. You've been retired now for about a year, is that right?
When I woke up on January 1st of this year, that's the first time on New Year's Day since 1965 I was unemployed. So December 31st was my last official day of work.
Wow. How have you liked it so far?
Well, people say that if there's anything better than retirement, God's keeping it a secret because he doesn't want too many people to go to it right away. It's a great thing. I mean, it gives you an opportunity to start another phase of your life. You know, you spend, like most people, an awful lot of time on the job and with the I had a lot of travel in the job I had. And, of course, you know, there's a every year, you know, and that's the one nice thing about young people, and I think Louis Armstrong had it, and it's a, you know, what a wonderful world it could be, mm-hmm. is that kids that are born will know so much more than you'll ever know. You know, and that's really, so when you get to a certain level in a large corporation like that, you have to work pretty hard to keep your skill sets pretty equivalent, because a big company, and, you know, 3M is the 100th largest corporation in the U.S. It was in the top 20 most admired corporations last year in the U.S. So it's got a real ability to draw the best of the best from anywhere in the globe, you know, to come to work for the company. So it's kind of like, you know, being in baseball, and everybody in the farm system is talented and coming up, and you've got to, you know, continue to work really hard to keep those types of skill sets current so that you're can do your job as good or better than anybody else in the world, because you've got thousands of people's families and their children depend on you to make good decisions and to give, you know, good direction so that they can be successful in life too. Hmm. So, but it feels really good to be retired.
Well, that's good. So tell me a little more about just your career before you retired. Obviously your last job was leading the 3M Cottage Grove site.
Well, that's kind of an urban myth here kind of thing.
Really? Okay.
I'll go back to the beginning just a little bit for you, and then we'll work our way to when I retired.
Okay.
So 1965 was the year after I got out of high school. went to De La Salle High School in Minneapolis. I was born and raised in North Minneapolis, right off of Broadway in Washington. Wasn't a great part of town then, and it's still not a great part of town. So we were an immigrant family. My mother's parents came from Russia. She was born in Canada. They were migrant farm workers that went from Winnipeg to Louisiana picking sugar beets. So there was like 12 children in her family. And there was five of us. And, of course, you know, we this sounds like a country western song almost. But it's true. That's not meant to sound that way. It's meant, you know, truly I've been very fortunate. I've lived the American dream that a lot of people are still striving to find out about. And you know, I'm a firm believer, and that's why I'm so optimistic all the time. And a lot of people will say that the sun never sets on my parade, no matter what the weather is, you know, because I'm always optimistic about it. But so neither one of my parents were able to even go to high school. So, and when we grew up, there was five of us sleeping crossways on a bed. So we worked really, really hard. But, of course, you know, the value sets were good, and the value of an education was really good. Four of the five of us ended up graduating from high school. But then in 1965, which was a year after I graduated from high school, I got married, I had my first child, and I went to work. So it was for a lot of people that I didn't get my first, my oldest son, who lives in Cottage Grove, paid for it until he was about six. So I know what it's like to have medical without hospitalization and those kinds of things. So I worked for a number of companies, primarily in the electronics industry and the printed circuit industry. 1972, I saw an ad in the paper that 3M was needing somebody with some really specific skill sets in metal finishing, electrochemistry, photolithographic, and a lot of those skill sets I had picked up both working and working with my father. So I applied for the job in 72. I started out as a technician in a laboratory. We made some of the miniature flexible circuits for hooking up semiconductors to the outside world. So it was really precision type, electrochemical type applications and photolithographic applications. From there, then in 72, for the next 25 years, I was moving 23 of the 25 years I was out of state from, was out of Minnesota. I lived in Columbia, Missouri, Springfield, Missouri, Boston, Massachusetts, Chicago, Illinois. I ran a multitude of different plants from chemical and adhesives in Springfield to primarily masking tape, the old diaper tapes for the fasteners on the diapers, electrical tapes, electrical insulation products, you know, in Boston. So I went from electrochemistry or inorganic chemistry to organic chemistry. And but for me, it was wonderful because I always had an opportunity to go into a new technology. And I was, like I said, De La Salle did a great job of getting me ready for the world. So, and I did very well in school. Seventh in my class or something like that. But and then I went, you know, I graduated while I was in Columbia, Missouri from with a degree in mechanical engineering. So I went back to school. I was 39 at the time. Huh. It took me a little while to get there and four children later, but we did that. And then, of course, then that led to the other opportunities to run facilities. 1996, I came, had the opportunity to take over the site here in Cottage Grove as a site director. I stayed as the site director until 2000. I continued to handle all of the regulatory operations out of the site, and there's a number of them because they're very technical, they're very complex. They have a corporate incinerator, we've got a wastewater treatment system, we've got our own wells, so there's MPDS permits, and I kept, like I said, continuous learning. So it was okay. There was nothing in there that was too technically challenging to not be able to handle. So, and in 2000, I've got a strong passion for sustainability and for the environment, and 3M has a number of other operations, so we put those together into my organization, which included at that time our resource recovery operation, which takes all of the materials that aren't used in the any of the byproducts from manufacturing, so they don't go into the end product. Or something that the customer doesn't use, eventually every company in the world is going to have to find a way to take it back. So the disposable, you know, packaging, those types of things, you know, we needed to. So that was a good thing. We also picked up a manufacturing operation as a vice president of a manufacturing subsidiary in Juarez, Mexico. And in 2003, I also picked up responsibility for our U.S. distribution, which means that every product that comes from a factory or from a third-party vendor that goes through our distribution system needs to be consolidated, reshipped to the end of the customer location was part of my responsibility. And so there we had operations in Los Angeles, Texas, El Paso, Texas, Atlanta, Georgia, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Chicago, Illinois, and we've got a medical distribution operation in Forest City, Iowa, which was the closest one. So that was, and then they also, I had responsibility for our corporate transportation, so all the contracts and things that we end up negotiating with, like either by truck or by rail or by ocean, anywhere within the U.S. or from the U.S. out to another country. I didn't handle the things that happened within a country. Mm-hmm. So, but to get it to China, to get it from China to here, came through our organization. So we had all the freight forwarding operations also in Miami and Long Beach, California, were the two primary ports that we used. But we had others set up in Vancouver and on the East Coast also to service Europe. So, but at that time, and from 2000 on, there was a site director on site that handled everything basically inside the fence line. And so I was still the face to the community. So that's why so many people think that, you know, I had total responsibility for that long. But and then all the regulated utilities and I handled. So it was kind of and it was really fortunate. You know, there's a lot of people that you continue to work with over the years. And because I had moved so many times and worked in so many different divisions, I was very fortunate to know a lot of people in the manufacturing organization. So it was a easy, you know, way to share duties. There was always some overlap, but, you know, it was always fine. You know, it worked out really well. So that's when it ended up, you know, that's why in that one announcement I gave you where it talks about millions of pounds of freight and millions of miles and millions of dollars and thousands of people. Mm-hmm. That was true. Yeah. So it was, but it was a great opportunity. It was a great company, and I got to do things that other people only dream of. And, of course, you know, when you move a lot, I learned a lot about real estate. Yeah, so we never lost money on a move, and we always bought houses that were, you know, 5 to 7 years old, so that you never had to put any money into it, because anytime you move, you're going to probably be there 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. So we've spent a lot of time on the road, and of course, like I said, my grandparents were immigrants, and the concept of having a home was really, you know, finally getting going. Place to settle down was important. So in 2000, we purchased some property, and then we built our house here in Cottage Grove, and I'm not moving again. This was my final move. So when I say that in the paper or something, it means nothing to anybody else. But for anybody that knows me, that says, well, geez, you know, this guy's been everywhere, and he's traveled, and it's really important.
Huh. That's neat. Is this your first time running for public office?
Mm-hmm. When you move a lot,
yeah,
it's very difficult. Now, in government, it's also a little bit difficult to try to it's easy, you got your choice, you know, I mean, and for me, when I worked in other locations, it was easier to get involved in charities and volunteer efforts. You know, as you can imagine, with the level of responsibilities I had and those types of things, I probably had every type of psychological test and profile done in the world. I mean, big companies are pretty careful to make sure that everybody's really wired right, you know, before they turn over a large. And so, and all the test scores and those things. And of course, some of that comes because of being an immigrant. They had the old settlement houses in North Minneapolis, which, you know, for people that don't know what a settlement house is, it basically where immigrants went and gathered, and they taught you how to become an American. You learn how to play baseball, shoot pool, you know, all the things that from a recreation standpoint. And they also had, like where the Mall of America is, when I was a kid, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, they used to pull up with flatbed trucks by the, you know, which then all the little kids would jump on the trucks, and then they'd take us out and we'd, you know, weed the truck farms by hand, and they'd give you 50 cents for the day and a free lunch, which was a big deal, and it taught you how to work. Of course, nowadays, you couldn't have a child in the back seat with under 80 pounds without a harness and a booster seat or something, you know. So, I mean, some of those things have changed a lot, you know, those rules and regulations.
Well, why did you decide to run for mayor?
Well, you know, the fact that, like I said, we've spent a lot of time in helping in the not-for-profits. When I was in Springfield, Missouri, I chaired the local United Way campaign. Springfield's a town of about 150,000 people. We raised about $3 million when I was president of the Chamber of Commerce. So I was the first non-Springfieldian ever to be elected to the Chamber of Presidency, which was kind of cool. But also when I was down there, they had Governor was John Ashcroft, who was the Attorney General. You know, this up to, what, 4 or 5 years ago when he stepped down. He was a governor. And they had a what they call the Missouri Corporation for Science and Technology. And basically the organization was set to provide guidance to both the Missouri Department of Economic Development and Employment and to the governor on things that would make the state more competitive in science, technology, and economic growth. So they took six people out of the universities, which were the chancellors or the presidents of the local of the universities, like University of Missouri, Columbia, Rolla, Washington University out of St. Louis, University of Missouri, Kansas City. So, I mean, it was a real mixture of universities there. So they took six folks from there, six people from the staff, and then they took six people out of private industry. So I got the opportunity to be one of the six that the governor selected, and then they took somebody from, there were people from McDonnell Douglas and when it was still headquartered in St. Louis, and Missouri was a net exporter of technology. So the focus out of that was to say, can government innovate better than the private sector? And, of course, having worked for 3M and being curious by nature, I said, sure, I'll do that. So that kind of gave me a little bit of that exposure to economic development in the community here. You know, I've been done a number of things over the last 10 years I've been here. I think I was president of the chamber for 3 years, was business person of the year, I think, in 2000 or 98 and 2002, something like that. And I used the service award from the Youth Service Bureau. I've chairman of Lakota Care. I've always tried to stay involved in the community. But I could never run for office in a community because you never knew when you were going to be out of town. Mm-hmm. So I think at this point in time, you know, I've retired here. I'm staying here. I'd like to see good things happen here in Cottage Grove. I think I've got a strong background in economic development. I don't know of anybody that's had the opportunity to do more things than I have, both in from an organized from a government perspective and from a private industry perspective. So I think that's kind of good. I think I've got the operational efficiency component to it. You don't move through competitive organizations, and manufacturing is the largest global team sport now. So I mean, you can hear the other candidates and talk about it that have never had to work for a living, and not in the mayoral candidates, but mm-hmm. National candidates. Yeah. You know, they start talking about global competitiveness, and it's, you know, they don't understand it. I mean, they just really don't understand how it works. So I think the benefit for myself is, I get an opportunity to make a contribution to the community. I think I can bring some efficiencies and effectiveness to government. You know, I think you and I chatted just briefly, you know, I people are going through some really tough times. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're right down to the basics in life that are shelter, food, utilities to stay warm, to stay cold, you know, stay cool in the summer, and getting down to the point where, you know, they need my gas to stay mobile. It's got to be a real challenge out there, and taxes are a component of it, and, you know, efficiency and effectiveness is something that you have to do in the private sector. You know, you have to provide the most value for whatever you're making with the minimal resources. Mm-hmm. And that value isn't judged by you, but that's the effectiveness component of the metrics that's judged by who buys the product or uses the service. So I think if we can bring a little more of that performance management into the government in the city of Cottage Grove, along with trying to increase efficiency and effectiveness a little bit, I think that'll help, and I think it'll help people from a tax perspective. And then the other side of the coin, I think, can also look at how we're going to get the growth out of it then, you know, from the economic development side that I can bring.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. I know the city administrator has been warning that we're facing tough budget times right now, but there are tougher times ahead as far as the city budget. How do you think the city should deal with that? Do you see opportunities for cuts, or do you think the city should raise taxes?
Well, I think And it just affirms how you define the word cuts. A lot of people, when they think of cuts, they think of either cutting headcount or cutting service. And in reality, you look at the efficiency side of it and you cut waste. And every organization has, to some degree, waste built into it. So we try to work, you know, we'll try to work to see if we can eliminate some of that waste to make it a more efficient organization. And I think we can do that. There's always opportunity. The other side of the coin, the housing market, nobody's 100% sure when that's going to rebound. Cottage Grove's got some other unique challenges that I think need to be looked at. I mean, you've got a significant, not a significant, but you've got a pretty good number of houses that are in that in an aging sector. You know, those houses, you know, they don't appreciate as fast. So you've got a fairly large base that is going to have kind of a minimal tax growth. So that's an issue for you. And you also have to look at how you're going to get new people into those houses. So, you know, the EDA, you know, I'm currently the president of the EDA, to try to start to mass market a little bit more Cottage Grove and what some of those benefits of Cottage Grove are. And it's not, you know, I think Josh or John did a good job, an article he wrote a couple of weeks ago that, you know, we're not just going to market dirt. I mean, just because we can sell a piece of land cheaper than somebody is not necessarily what we want to be about. What we need to do is bring in some jobs. We need to get some businesses here that will provide some jobs. If you community survey, I don't remember the exact number, but there's like over half of the people leave Cottage Grove every day to go to work. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's when you start to talk about fuel, you talk about transportation, you talk about other things, that's difficult. So if we can find the jobs to come to town, that'll create the demand for housing, especially at the entry-level housing or affordable housing level. I think we'll have that opportunity. And when we do that, then we'll start to see some of the amenities start to come in. Mm-hmm. Because you'll have daytime people here. You'll have people, now if you over half of the people are going to Woodbury or Maplewood or St. Paul to go to work, then they might as well shop there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them do. I mean, if you drive past Home Depot the last 4 days, if any, those parking lots would have been half full, they wouldn't have closed. It's just that people have come from all over to go bargain hunting. You know, but we've got to get that convenience kind of side of it here. And I think that's the message that we have to get through. We've got to find a way to get employment into the city.
So your strategy would be to go more after the industrial office type places, retail would come? Is that your...
Well, I think the retail's a result. That's why you can't manage to get... You know, it's hard to say, my goal is I'm going to get this piece of retail. Well, if they can't come in and they can't make money, and there's nobody here to buy it during the daytime, they ain't coming. You know, I mean, all you can do is create an environment that, you know, for business to grow and for businesses to come into a community. That's what we have to work on a little bit more. And we also have to get some good collaboration between the city, the businesses that are already here, education, the civic groups that are not-for-profits to start working as a unit. And then, you know, we've got a lot of talent. We've got a lot of bright people in town. I mean, there's no reason why we can't stimulate to get some type of economic growth. But to your point, the jobs have to be in that, you know, $13 to $18 an hour range anyways. I mean, it's got to be a job that people can actually make money at and make a living. And by the time you take into consideration what they're currently paying in transportation and parking or other things to leave town, some of those jobs would be very appealing. Plus, you get another hour or 2 hours a day of your life back. Yeah, so I think there's some opportunities for that. I mean, and it's kind of neat. I mean, even if you look at, and I'll say the W word that everybody hates to say, but even if you look at Woodbury, you know, with all of the commercial and that they have in town, a lot of the people that are working in those don't live in Woodbury. But the medical side of it that they're putting in, and they put a real strong focus in medical development, and you've read about it in the paper over the last year and a half, and with Woodwinds Hospital, they continue to try to expand that medical component. Those are good jobs. Those are people that can live in Woodbury and make a good living and have discretionary income. And we need to do that here. We need to find a way to do that.
Well, let's talk specifically, what do you think of the proposal that's out there that's, I guess, been talked about a lot, at least, about a retail center at the Cottage View Drive-In site. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I'm probably the have a little different attitude towards development than other people do. You know, not everybody that tells you what you want to hear is your friend, and not everybody that tells you what you don't want to hear is your enemy. And my dad taught me that really early in life. I hope everybody understands that. It has to be quality development. Quality development means it has to be good for both the business and the community. You can't be a situation where we're a net loser or we have to put in so much money that you can't do other things. So, I mean, it has to have that balance. So, for me, I have to see the data before I can even start to get excited about an opportunity like that. And there was never any financial data presented. I mean, there's a road study that was done to redo the bridge up on 19 and extend the road into, down to St. Paul Park and Great Cloud Island. It's 30-some million dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, now, that's a lot of money. You know, in any neighborhood, that's a lot of money. I mean, you know, who pays for it? You know, I mean, that's the issue. And can you truly recover that cost? And it doesn't matter to me which arm of the government pays for it. Tax is a tax. I don't care whether it's city, county, state, federal. I mean, it has to be money spent wisely. So, you know, I guess I'd have to, you know, you got to see the numbers. And then I'd look at it. I mean, if it's a good business thing for the city, sure. You know, but if it doesn't have a financial payback for the citizens, then you don't want to start subsidizing multi-billion dollar corporations to move to your town. I mean, if you do that, you know, that's not a good, because you never get out of it. It's a slippery slope, and it's a tough one to break. I mean, we've already. You know, we do a lot with tax increment financing, and when we talk about the cost of real estate and things that we try to provide for people to make it attractive to come here. But we need people to come here because they say, boy, I want to go to Cottage Grove because I could be successful there. You know, that's what we got to have.
There are a few projects that get talked about here and there that they might be coming in the future that people say we should have. Specifically a new city hall and a recreation center. Do you think either of those are needed right now?
Well, you know, the thing about, you know, it's a little bit different when you sit in the council chambers, when you're a council member and you talk to people. People get very passionate about certain things, you know, and I try to listen really hard, and if they want me to go look at something with them, I'll go look at it with them, but a community center, for 90% of the people on the survey, when they took the community survey, basically said that their recreation needs were being met. I mean, that's, if you go back, and you have to go back, like, hey, I'm sure it was 90%. There's, you know, then you look at the other 10%, what would you like to have? Well, and sure, I would love to see opportunity for, you know, more recreation for teenagers and young adults. But I'd also more like to see more opportunity for teenagers to have a chance to get an experience in the workforce. I'd like to see us focus some efforts on trying to get a community college reestablished back in town. We had one a few years ago when I was president of the Chamber of Commerce. We got business to partner with together to bring in Invale's Community College. We had our own little website and our own little Cottage Grove Community Center. I mean, a college center was kind of cool. But what we got to do is we got to help kids get ready so they can participate and become, you know, contributing citizens, not just entertainment. So, I mean, while entertainment would be good, we still have to find some way. It's got to be put in proportion, and you got to look at where those monies should be invested. I grew up living, you know, as a library junkie in North Minneapolis. I mean, if it wasn't for the public libraries, I don't know what I would have done. And, of course, all I hear here is that we don't have a bookstore. You know, maybe if we had a better library, maybe if we took some of those millions of dollars we were going to spend on a county road and put it into a place for people to actually get a chance to have a good experience with books and online systems, you know, maybe it would work. So that was in a city hall. I think a community college is, I know every council member and the mayor, she says the same thing. That should not be a council vote. Mm-hmm. That should be a referendum that the citizens vote on if a plan comes forward. But public-private partnership if somebody wants to come in and they think they can make money at it without the city having to be a safety net for them, then that would be okay also. But if it's, you know, if it's just the city putting it in, then we need to ask all the citizens how they would feel about that. The city hall, and I've brought it up at the last council goal-setting meeting, and I think it's penciled in there in one of the footnotes in the goals, but you really need to do a good capital analysis on what you're going to do for capital expenditures now and into the future. You can't just keep doing these one-offs. You know, I mean, you can't argue about a park building one day and city hall the next day or fire department the next day. I mean, you know, so is public works in the right place? If you decide you're going to get rid of the asset, what's it worth? How long is it going to take you to dispose of it? You put the whole financial package together just like anybody in a business would. I mean, if we didn't have a plan for our capital management, I mean, you have to be good stewards of this shareholders' capital. Mm-hmm. You should be just as good a steward in the government side of it, of the citizens' capital. The city doesn't really own those, the people own them. So you should have a long-term plan on how you're going to use these things, when they're going to, the life expectancy is done, or what if you decide you're going to build something, you make sure you're building it the right size, you put in the right things. It should also be a sustainable part of it, which is another goal I'd like to see the city put in place, is a sustainability commission. You know, something that says that what we're doing thinking into the future that 10 years from now, all the actions we're taking today will provide a sustainable environment for the community. So the buildings, I mean, what's the right shape of the building 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Would you build the same building, the same construction that you would have last year? I mean, would you have solar panels? Would you have sunroofs, you know, skylights, you know, kind of things? I mean, how are you going to look at that? And that's that. You got to start to pull that together. Mm-hmm. You know, so that is it's a little bit of a hot button. I mean, for me, you know, I mean, I look at the Wakota Bridge, and I think it's fabulous that they're putting a second bridge up there. But I'll bet you that I'd be challenged. I'd be interested to see the research here, but and I've thought about doing it, but I haven't. I'm curious as how long it took them to build the first ring around the Twin Cities freeway system. Mm-hmm. And how much it cost versus how long it's taken to build that one bridge and how much it's cost. It'd
be an interesting analysis.
I'll bet you they're within 5 years of each other. Hmm. And I don't think the costs are going to be all that dissimilar. Hmm.
What do you think a mayor's role is?
Well, I know what it's been, and you know, what do I think it would be, you know, if I were elected. I think. Part of it, you know, when you succeed in business and you succeed in the private sector, to be a good leader and a good manager or a good director or whatever the title that you have at the time, you try to take complex things and you try to make them simple so that people can understand it, they can see the math, they can see the numbers, they can take ownership into it, and they help you achieve the goals. Government, on the other hand, from my limited experience, appears to do just the opposite. They take simple things and make them extremely complex so that nobody understands it. Everybody gets confused and there's very little accountability. So from my perspective, I'd love to see us try to get these things a little bit simpler, make it so that most every citizen can understand the city budget. And they should understand the city budget. It's their money. And you know, every decision that's made, even though it's a budget line, typically impacts a citizen. And whether you're cutting a staff service, or you're eliminating a service, or you're just taking something out that they out of a fund that was created to create something into the future for them, it impacts a citizen. They should be able to understand that. It shouldn't be that hard. You know, multi-billion-dollar corporations have to be able to explain it to their shareholders at a stockholders meeting once a year. Wouldn't it be nice if once a year somebody said, "I'm going to tell you how tax ain't work this year. And where the money's being spent, I'm going to tell and say, you understand it." Yeah, I think that would be really, and then the other side of the coin, you're the spokesperson for the community. And I think that's a area where I've got an awful lot of advantage in some respects because, you know, I've been with CEOs of major corporations. I've met two presidents of the United States. I mean, I've had some really fortunate experiences. I don't get too flustered and or caught up in things. I mean, I'm pretty cool, level-headed about things. So, I think I can communicate well to the folks that may have an interest in Cottage Grove. I think I can sell Cottage Grove. The other thing that the mayor gets to do is you know, you get to chair the meetings, you know, and you get to kind of work a little bit on the agenda with people. But I think the thing that any of the listeners might want to remember is this is a weak mayor format. This is not a strong mayor format like some cities have. So you have one vote. The other council members each have one vote. Your vote's no more important than theirs. So citizens need to think not just about the mayor's race, but they should be looking at good council members also, for because there'll be two new council members elected. And those, each one is equally important from the decisions that are made. And I can't tell you how, you know, after having, you know, worked with some of the folks that are on the current council, you know, the Cottage Grove has been fortunate that they've got a very talented group of people right now. And they, you know, but they've got some choices that are coming up that they need to evaluate the candidates and pick people that can do the best job for them.
Now, you're doing something that I've never heard of before with your campaign funding, encouraging people to donate to charity, right?
Well, we're going to do that. I haven't, put it in any way public announcements yet, and hopefully, you know, y'all can help me with that. But mm-hmm. like we said earlier, you know, people are struggling with the basics, and people are having trouble putting, you know, like I said, you know, food on the table, you know, shelter. You know, they got foreclosures, high rents. You know, people are having difficulty paying their utilities and putting gas in their cars to be able to take the family where they want to go. I know because I've been involved in a number of the not-for-profits. You know, over the years I've had dealings with, you know, Food Shelf, Stone Soup, Youth Service Bureau, Crime Board, Cottage Grove Athletic Association, Scouts. I mean, Cottage Grove is very fortunate. They got a lot of great organizations to try to help people, but right now there's more of a higher demand for their services than there are resources coming in. And so I'd feel pretty bad, you know, if I were to take people's money at a time when they could really use it to help other folks right now. So what I'm going to do is encourage anybody that would was thinking about making a campaign donation to pick their charity. Hopefully it's a local charity, but it's their choice. Make the check out directly to that charity. Don't send it to me, because send it and, you know, expecting me to forward it. You know, make it out direct. It's just like any other contribution they would make. If they want to let me know that they made the contribution, I'd be happy to send them a thank you letter and acknowledge that they did that. I'd be very appreciative. If somebody was thinking about holding a campaign fundraiser, I'd just assume they picked a charity fundraiser. And if they, whatever charity they want, if they want to invite me to attend, I'd be happy to attend. If they want to invite other candidates to attend, that's okay too. I don't have any concern. I'd like to meet the people, thank the people, and again, encourage anybody that gets that opportunity to maybe make a contribution. Again, if they make it to a charity, it's tax deductible if they itemize. If they make it to me, it's not. So I think it's got an opportunity. I'd like to make sure that win or lose, that when it's done, I can look in the mirror and say, you know, I think something good came out of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if we were able to maybe help some other people that are in need, that these organizations provide some support for, I feel pretty good about that, even when no matter how the outcome comes out.
So you does know, that mean that your any expenses that you incur, you'll pay for mm-hmm. yourself, signs and whatnot?
Absolutely. And we will run, just like I talk about trying to run an efficient, effective form of government, we will run a very efficient, effective campaign, and hopefully it'll be, you know, kind of like the old beer commercial, more fun, less cost. Or less cost, more fun, less filling.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
If you missed it, be sure to listen to last week's podcast where I interviewed Luden's opponent in the race, Myron Bailey. If you have comments on this podcast, please email them to editor@swcbulletin.com. Thanks for listening.